the Ghost Goal Podcast.
It's a sad, sad day to be a Chelsea fan, as Chelsea boy Mason Mount has left in a $60 million deal to go to rivals Manchester United after his relationship with the new ownership fell apart while trying to negotiate a new contract over the past season. We're going to be using this pod as a little bit of group therapy for myself, because Mount is a player that I've been following for many, many years since his days in the Chelsea Academy, and it's sad to see him leave so early before he can truly reach his potential at this club. We're not just going to talk about Mason Mount. It's not just going to be a pity party for me, Alex. We've got other transfers to discuss. Who would have thought, Javier?
Timber!
We did 2 weeks before the pod we did last week. And in the week since that last pod, we've got a whole bunch of other transfers
popped up
since the start of July 1st. Once again, I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast. Where do we begin, Javier? Because I feel like we've dipped in and out of this Mason Mount saga for at least the last couple of months, as the realization started to set in that he really could be leaving the club.
You know, I just re-listened to the last pod a couple days ago, and you were still dead sure on the last pod that he wasn't going to leave. You thought that there was no way the club was going to let him go, especially not to Manchester United. So I can imagine the shock. I was shocked. I have a little bit of affection as well for Mason Mount, purely because Alex has, since, you know, this kid was basically 16 years old, you know, been touting him to me, telling me, you know, this kid's going to be amazing. He's doing really well on Vitesse and, you know, for the academy. And then, you know, when he was with Frank Lampard at Derby, you know, all of those scenarios, seeing him grow to the player that he won, I think, 3 player of the seasons with Chelsea in a row, won a Champions League. I mean, I thought that this guy was going to be in Chelsea's midfield for the rest of his career. You know, this is the type of player that would have probably stayed on Chelsea for the rest of his career. And I don't know how he's going to do from this move.
Can we talk about the Man United side of it? Because I think there is a lot to talk about for that side of it. I just want to, you know, play the smallest violin known to men for a couple of minutes and stick to the sad part for a little bit. I'm sure you can get the answer to this, Javier, because I've sent it to you and to, you know, our group chats plenty of times. But in the Premier League era, can you name the 3 players that have won Chelsea Player of the Season twice? Again, Premier League era, so 1992 to now. 3 players have won Chelsea Premier League Player of the Season twice. Who are they?
Frank Lampard.
Correct.
Eden Hazard.
Correct.
And Mason Mount.
Correct. You're talking about a player that was produced by the academy, won trophies at every level of the academy, including like multiple youth Champions League medals. A player who went and impressed in both loans that he had before coming into the senior team at Vitesse. He won Player of the Year at Derby. Didn't win Player of the Year, but was one of their best attacking players. And we remember the whole hullabaloo or saga of the transfer window when Frank Lampard came in as Chelsea manager, where Chelsea had a transfer ban. We could only bring back like loan players like Mason Mount and Reece James. And we were, you know, kind of on edge there. We were not very certain, but most people weren't picking us to make the top 4 that season. And yet we still did it with those 2 new players coming into the squad and having, big first seasons back at Chelsea. And I remember one big moment along the way was the first home game of that season. I remember coming over to your place in Virginia, and we were watching Chelsea versus Leicester in the first home game, and Mason Mount stole the ball off Wilfred Ndidi and scored like 20 minutes in or something. And I was just, you know, absolutely going off about like, you see, I was right. My Mason Mount, he's absolutely good enough for this level. And you were just sitting there like, wow, okay, like, Mount's the real deal. So, yes, Mason Mount has been a very derided player for the last couple of seasons. He seems like either you get it or you don't. And a lot of people don't seem to get it. They seem to think he's overrated. But I'm telling you right now that what Mason Mount, like, doesn't necessarily have in, you know, five-star skill moves or the equivalent of that in, you know, FIFA or something like that. He makes up for with his footballing IQ and for just his determination, like on and off the ball. He's an incredibly determined player, which is not something you find in too many like attacking midfielders. Those players are generally thought of as a little bit soft, you know, kind of like Bruno Fernandes, you know. They're very good on the ball, but, you know, they don't really have that sort of drive to go win the ball back or push their team back into the game. Mason Mount has all of that and then some more. It's a huge loss, and it's something I don't think I'll forgive the Chelsea owners for anytime soon. I was tweeting last week when it looked like it was pretty much solidified, and that news came in the day after we recorded, by the way. I think it was on Thursday, and we had recorded on the Wednesday night that, like, Sky was saying that the deal had been agreed. And I tweeted then that, like, the only thing that would make me forgive, like, this ownership for fucking this up, which this is a huge fuck up by, you know, Todd Boehly, Behdad Iqbali, the new Chelsea owners, huge fuck up by them. They had a deal agreed with him back in November or October of last year. And then when he came back from the World Cup, all of a sudden the deal that was basically the equivalent of the Man United deal he ended up signing was off the table. And they were only offering him like 1 year extensions on much less money. So they basically told him, like, we'd rather sell you, get the money, and, you know, reshape the team without Mason Mount, which I can handle selling Kai Havertz. He's underperformed. I can handle letting Azpilicueta go, letting Pulisic go. All these players have, you know, underperformed for Chelsea for most of this season. Mason Mount had injuries for a lot of this season. And when he did play, he still gave a shit and still looked like a player who wanted to give a shit for the club. And in this, you know, phase of new ownership that we're going into and a new manager, you would have thought like a player from the academy who's Chelsea through and through would be someone you wanted to lock up and, you know, keep at the club to help ease that transition. But no, instead they took the 60, 65 million and they're running with it. And we'll see who they end up signing. Maybe they can try and make up for it that way. But the only way I could see this new ownership being forgiven for something like this is if, you know, Chelsea turn around and win the league or Champions League in the next year or two, which I'm not going to predict. I don't see that happening. So what I'm saying is, fuck this new ownership. I gave him a chance and they threw it in my face. So.
Well, Alex, I mean, it seems a little bit odd that they would let Mason Mount go, but at the same time, if it's kind of been their DNA to, they're restructuring the club from like the bottom down. They want to change it completely and build it up their way. And they're willing to invest, you know, billions of dollars to do that. So,
yeah, but you're investing.
If you guys end up going out and getting Caicedo and you go and get
in the wrong players, I have a right to be upset. Like, if the reason they didn't want to pay Mason Mount like the 200 or the 300K a week that he wanted, I think he's on 290, so almost 300K a week now. If you're refusing to pay that to Mason Mount, but just last summer you were willing to pay it for Raheem Sterling, then I'm sorry. We're clearly not operating on the same level of good faith, because Raheem Sterling is a good player. He's had a very good Premier League career, but he was 27, maybe 28 when we signed him. I think 27. So a couple of good years left. Mason Mount is 24, and he has won big trophies for the club. Won the Champions League, played the assist to Kai Havertz that won them the Champions League, scored against Real Madrid in the semifinal that year to seal that game.
Do you think this is going to be the type of player that Chelsea are going to regret letting go?
Yes,
100%. Like, do you think that he's going to be really good? I actually am not so sure.
Do you think Liverpool would have regretted letting Steven Gerrard go after he won the Champions League for them? Yes. So the same applies here.
Well, I'm saying in terms of your team, yes, but I don't know if he's going to, at least at United. I think maybe in his move after that, he might become better, but I mean, we'll see. I'm not sure how good he's going to be for Manchester United. Do you think, I know that we just talked about Mason for a while there, but like at the Chelsea side, but we should talk about the United side. Do you think he's actually going to be a good player for them? And do you think he's what they needed? I mean, I actually don't think he's really the profile of player necessarily that they needed, but Mason is such a Swiss Army knife. He can play all across the front line, in the midfield. So there's definitely ways to utilize him, and there's Ten Hag's going to, I'm sure, try different ways to utilize him.
I've told you my theory for this in a group chat. You may have forgotten it, but this is how I think things play out. I think in the beginning, and also a lot of this depends on who Manchester United end up signing, you know, on top of, you know, this Mason Mount signing. They still probably need a center forward, probably another more like defensive midfielder if McTominay and Fred are going to leave, and a right back, maybe even a left back. So depending on who else they sign, I can see there being a scenario where their midfield to start the season is Casemiro in defensive midfield, Mason Mount and Bruno Fernandes as the two eights, number eight kind of players, box-to-box players ahead of Casemiro. Now, against like the worst teams in the league, I think that can work pretty well, but I think they will probably struggle if they try to trot out that midfield against, you know, Manchester City, Arsenal, you know, some of the teams right up near the top of the league. It's a little bit too lightweight to have both Mount and Fernandes in your midfield three, even if you have Casemiro shielding the defense behind them. I think the major casualty of this could be Bruno Fernandes, who, by all means, has put up good stats at like most of the stops he's had in his career, is still like a potential match winner for Manchester United. But I think the attitude, his attitude in particular, Erik ten Hag may have enough of it. And I think Mason Mount signing him now is a way to sort of ease that transition. So maybe in January, maybe next summer, Bruno Fernandes may be a player who's on, you know, the selling block. They sell him to whoever else wants to come in and get him. And Mason Mount takes over as the number 10 main creative force in Manchester United's midfield. Now, in an Erik ten Hag team, I could see that going very, very well. Ten Hag's gotten the best out of multiple players. You know, Hakim Ziyech, not the exact same player as Mason Mount, but played his best under Ten Hag at Ajax. Donny van der Beek, more of a similar comparison to Mason Mount. Erik ten Hag got the best out of him at Ajax as well. Ten Hag is right up there, and I've said this about Klopp mainly when a couple of months ago when the rumors first came out.
Lisandro Martinez is another one that's really,
I was trying to think of like players like who are more the same profile as like Mount himself, you know, hardworking attacking players who, you know, can pop up with goals and assists as well. So I wasn't thinking of like the defensive players at Ajax that Ten Hag had, more of like the attacking ones. What I was saying about, you know, it scared me that like Mount was being linked to Liverpool because of Klopp and what Klopp could do with a player like Mason Mount. All of those same thoughts apply to Erik ten Hag. Mount is a perfect number 10 attacking player for how Ten Hag wants to play. He's the perfect player to help trigger your press high up the field, win the ball back, maybe not even necessarily score or assist himself, but just do the dirty work of getting the ball back high up the field and create better chances.
Yeah, you don't think he's
going
to go to Manchester and, number one, miss being in London. He's a London boy, lived there his entire life.
He's going to miss
his teammates, his family. Oh, okay. Well,
but he moved to London when he was six. So I don't think the change of going up to Manchester will be that big of a deal.
Okay. I think there'll be some adjustment there. I think, you know, getting along with teammates that have been rivals for a long time is going to be difficult. You know, completely new environment. It'll take him time to adapt. I don't think he'll hit the ground running this year, but I think in the future, like you said, I think he could be a great player for Manchester United. I think this year he won't do that much, and people will maybe be, you know, saying, oh, good on Chelsea getting rid of him. But I think 2-3 years down the line, he's going to produce for United, and I do think it'll be another one of those signings that Chelsea end up regretting, you know, then the Kevin De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah, I mean, even Romelu Lukaku. You have to put him there, even though he hasn't produced for you. You ended up going back and spending $100 million to get him back, letting go of Tammy Abraham, who's just way better player. I mean, all of these things happen when you make the wrong decisions in the academy early, and you let players go that shouldn't be let go. And it's cost Chelsea in the past. It's costing Chelsea now. And it's also the cost of buying $600 million, you know, worth of players in January. The players are all probably looking over their shoulder who are there and going, oh, we're all getting replaced soon. So they called their agent the next day and said, all right, get me a new club.
Well, do you know who this move is best for? Do you know who's absolutely salivating and so happy about this move? A young boy named Connor Gallagher.
Yeah, he'll probably get some game time.
I mean, he's the natural replacement, another Academy player, and, you know, has very much the same sort of qualities that Mount has. He's not as polished as Mount, like, was when he was, like, coming out of the Academy, but he's been on more loans, and he's had probably a more successful loan than Mount when he, you know, scored like 10 goals for Crystal Palace like the season before last. I'm excited to see how he reacts to this, because he should be thinking, that's my spot now. I need to hold down that spot in midfield, and Pochettino can, you know, help him get to the next level. But we'll cover that when the games get going again. Just want to hit on like a couple more rumor transfers out as well. For Chelsea specifically, it was confirmed that Ruben Loftus-Cheek is leaving the club after, you know, not just as long as Mason Mount, even longer than Mason Mount. Mount's only 24 and Ruben's 26. So then they've both been at the club since they were like 6 years old. So two of my favorite Academy players who I thought were going
to... Abu Diaby, Alex.
Yes. My
The player I thought
was going to be Yaya Toure for us turned into Abu Diaby. But I still love him all the same, and I hope the best for him at AC Milan. And AC Milan are, you know, having a hell of a time trying to pick off our scraps. It seems like they're rumored to be interested in Christian Pulisic. I will believe that when I see it finally confirmed, because Pulisic has like $200,000 a week wages that he seems convinced that he deserves to keep being paid that much. If he insists on that, I'm sure AC Milan will laugh him right out of the room. So good luck to him on that. And Cesar Azpilicueta, it seems like he's going to sort of, you know, cancel his contract with Chelsea and move to Atletico Madrid on a free. So Chelsea can continue this exodus to make room for players like this Nicholas Jackson guy, who it was announced, I think the day after, maybe 2 days after the last pod we did, he's going to be joining from Villarreal on about 36 million euros was the cost to buy, you know, activate his transfer clause and bring him in. He's only 22 years old, very raw, untapped potential kind of player, but, you know, has all the qualities to play either on the left of a front three or as the center forward in a front three.
He's similar to Ollie Watkins. He's kind of like a quick, pacey, you know, like raw, but Watkins has improved a lot in the last couple of years in the league.
He's like 6'1".
Watkins is pretty big too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're both like pretty big, but they still have pace.
He's like Ollie Watkins, so.
I would take
another
that.
Ollie Watkins.
I would take that right away. Yeah. if he's half as good as Ollie Watkins, I'll take that.
It took Watkins a couple of years to get to like that level he got last year, and he's still like that. That was just a spurt he had. The rest of the season, he wasn't banging in goals like that. It was just that like 10-game spell where he scored every game. But you know, he needs to do that for an entire season, get 25, 26 goals before, you know, we start talking about him as an elite striker. But briefly, I just want to mention Aston Villa, because we don't have a transfer here, but I think this is almost official. Pau Torres from Villarreal is going to be likely announced in the next couple of days for Aston Villa. It's a huge signing for them. I think Pau Torres is a quality center back, played loads for the Spanish national team. You know, he's won Europa League, you know, done really well under Unai Emery before. You know, that Villarreal team or the Aston Villa team is going to be scary next year.
It's not a good sign for Diego Carlos. Remember the Brazilian center back they signed last year from Sevilla, I think, who got injured, like tore his ACL in like the very first game for Villa and was out for the entire season. He's another like left-sided center back who, you know, this probably means that they're not expecting him to get back to a level where, you know, he can be relied upon. So maybe they keep him in reserve, but you know, signing someone like Pau Torres, like a very definitive left-footed, left-sided center back like Diego Carlos, kind of shows you where the tea leaves are falling for him. But I agree that that could be like a potentially huge signing for Villa in, you know, their push to try and get up not just to Conference League but to Europa and maybe even Champions League. All right, Javier, let's mention your boys. You kind of tried to start on this last week, but, you know, now you've got a little bit more time. Jurrien Timber looks like he's like all signed up. The center back/right back from Ajax is arriving for 40 million euros plus, I think, 5 million in add-ons.
This is wild, Alex. This is absolutely insane. First of all, it is July 5th, and Arsenal have spent 215 million in this transfer window. Praise Jesus. I mean, this has never happened for Arsenal ever. Always under Wenger, we never spent a lot of money. And if we did, it was in desperation. It would be like the last week of the transfer window and he would buy a bunch of players. There was always panic buys at the end. You know, there was the notorious window where we only signed Peter Cech. You know, we spent like 14 million. It wasn't even that long ago. Like people who are like, this was only six, seven years ago that we were.
Peter Cech was like going. Yeah. Like 8 years ago, 2015. I remember it.
No, I know. But we had several windows like that after that where we signed a couple of players, maybe three, four, five. And we also had outgoings. And it was never like we have no players leaving this summer who are going to be in the first team, who were in the first team last year. All of them, other than Granit Xhaka, who I think we wanted to upgrade on him, and possibly Partey. We'll see if that actually happens. I think that deal is going to be a lot harder to happen. But to have already the three first-team players that we wanted to bring in, basically, Declan Rice, Jurrien Timber, and Kai Havertz, all by July 5th, reporting for preseason. Like, we're going to have these deals done going into preseason, so these players are going to be able to fully integrate in a whole preseason with the squad. We're going to hit the ground running. I mean, I have no doubt that this team is going to be top level when we get to the start of the season because of how we played all of last season, of how we've conducted business this summer, how quick we've done it, how we've re-signed players like William Saliba, like Gabriel Martinelli, like Bukayo Saka, like Aaron Ramsdale. Odegaard's next. You know, that's the next one. He still has 3 years on his deal, but we're going to re-sign him, I'm sure. And we're getting rid of players like Granit Xhaka, like Rob Holding, who, you know, we used Holding a lot last year. And we're bringing in a player like Jurrien Timber to replace Rob Holding. You know, we now have Ben White, Jurrien Timber, William Saliba, and Gabriel Magalhaes as our four center backs. And Tomiyasu can play center back as well.
And Declan Rice can play center back in a pinch.
I mean, we have now fantastic depth at center back. We have four great interchangeable center backs. Jurrien Timber, he's a very nimble, quick, physical. I would say the one thing that he'll need to improve a lot is his first touch. I see, like, he's a very raw first touch, takes a lot of, you know, kind of big touches, but he has a lot of athleticism. So there's some touches that he takes that might look like he's not going to get there, but he can. So, you know, I think he'll have to improve on that. He'll lose the ball a lot in the Premier League, maybe at first. But that's something I think can be coached in preseason. You know, hopefully by the time the season rolls around, you know, he's already improved on that. And you said it to me, like, you know, he's kind of like a Kyle Walker. He can, you know, operate as a center back or a right back. He's very, very quick. He was one of the best attacking fullbacks in the league last year, on a very good Ajax side. So I'm excited for him. You know, I think players from the Dutch league, especially defensive players who come for big money, always end up being good. I mean, it's just like there's been very few players.
I don't have
defensive players.
Okay, I'm just
not.
I want to
Alex.
Challenge it. I just can't think of the bad ones so far, but I know there are plenty of bad ones because that league is not good defensively. That league is a shit show defensively.
Well, I'm saying, but exactly. But when you're a good player defensively in that league, and then usually in the Champions League, you show it. You get bought for big money, but there's rarely big money moves from the Dutch league defensively. It's usually offensive players, you know, wingers and strikers that come from there. But anyway, still very excited about Jurrien Timber. He's a player that everyone kind of thought was going to be pipelined to Manchester United because of Ten Hag. Never thought that we would be in for him. And people were saying that this guy would be unbelievable next to Lisandro Martinez. And
he would have ended up playing right back if he moved to United. Like, he was linked there last year.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, he would have played right back, and, you know, he might play right back a lot for us, and there's times where maybe Saliba might need a rest or he might be hurt, and then we can move Ben White to center back.
Sure.
And put Timber at right back, and there's just the possibilities now are endless, having players like Jurrien Timber, like Tomiyasu, who can play left and right back and center back. Just having that versatility is going to be able to take this team to another level. Just so excited. So excited, Alex.
Can I just ask, obviously, I take all of that into account. I agree with you that, you know, the best quality that signing a player like Timber brings is, you know, the team depth. It's a great move in that regard. But, you know, Jurrien Timber, the player, the individual, he's not moving to the Premier League to, you know, sit on the bench and play, you know, the odd game here and there as a rotation option. Which player that currently, you know, has like a pretty lockdown spot in the Arsenal back line should be worried the most?
Probably Ben White.
You think so? Yeah, I was thinking either him or Gabriel, but Gabriel's like such a giant, like,
no,
like
Gabriel's force. Nailed on. Gabriel's absolutely nailed on.
I agree with you. I'm
on.
Just saying,
then,
as the season progresses.
Oh, I forgot about Kiwior. I didn't even talk about Kiwior, but that's the other like left-footed center back for depth. And Kiwior played well at the tail end of last season and even replaced Holding in the team, which is, I think, why we're willing to just let Holding go now, because Kiwior can be that fifth center back now. And we have just so much depth now at the back that I'm not worried if a couple of players go down now, even Saliba. You know, we didn't really have the depth for Saliba last year. By going and signing someone like Timber, you're ensuring that, you know, players like Tomiyasu don't have to play as many games, that maybe Saliba can get a little bit of rest. All of those things are going to be positive a Champions League campaign, and Timber's going to have plenty of time to play. You know, Ben White and Timber, we're going to need them, you know, playing right back all season long. There's, you know, I don't think that one player is going to drop or the other, and you need to have two high-quality players in every single position in the team to keep, you know, competition up, and this is doing that. So that was a position I feel like with Tomiyasu, we kind of did, but Tomiyasu's been hurt a lot, so it's hard to rely on him for depth there. And, you know, we're getting rid of Cedric as well. I think he's on his way out the door as well. I think he still has a year left, so we have to get rid of him. But Cedric, Holding, Xhaka.
All right, well, that's enough of the Arsenal chat. We've got a pretty big signing for Liverpool to discuss. They announced, or pretty much made official, the signing of Dominik Szoboszlai from RB Leipzig. Instead of going for Mason Mount, they decided to break the bank, a little bit more than what was paid for Mount, but 70 million euros to RB Leipzig. For who I think is a quite similar player in terms of his, you know, characteristics and general profile. Yeah, he's a Hungarian attacking midfielder who can also play out on the left wing as a bit more of like a reserved wing option, who likes to cut in on his right foot and has an absolutely lethal shot on his right foot from that sort of left side of midfield and deeper positions as well. I would even go as far as to say that in terms of his attacking output,
he's a Hungarian Odegaard.
He's got like a better finish on him than Mason Mount does. You know, I think he's an adequate defensive force.
So does Odegaard. Mason Mount never got 15 goals in the season.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm saying exactly that he has, you know, more goals, or usually scores more goals and has more attacking threat than Mount does. But what I'm saying is that he does not have the same sort of, you know, defensive work rate as a player like Mount does. Now, he does work hard enough off the ball, but he's a bit more of a flair player. But he's a player that makes this, you know, long
list of
attacking options.
I think he's like the Bobby Firmino replacement.
No. I mean, he's like, they're evidently very clearly changing the makeup of their team. It's gone from a team that was solely focused in three players, Firmino, Mane, and Salah, getting them all the goals and finishing everything that their wingbacks created, while the midfield just did all the hard work. They're shifting from that to a more well-rounded approach. You know, they want a bit more balanced goals from midfield, players that can play multiple positions. Akpo, the, you know, Dutch forward/midfielder that they signed back in January, he can play pretty much anywhere across the front three and is like a number 10 in midfield. Szoboszlai can play
in midfield
and is a left winger. They have a lot of players.
Okay, but like, where's room for all these players? They have Luis Diaz. They have Mohamed Salah.
There isn't.
They have Darwin Nunez. There's so many attacking players in this team. Like, are you going to fit Szoboszlai, Luis Diaz, Darwin Nunez, Mohamed Salah?
Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai. Yeah, Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
Szoboszlai. Yeah, but are you going to fit all these players in the team? I mean, it seems like the team's not going to be balanced that way. Fabinho, well, I feel like they're going to... You also have McAllister. McAllister's like an attacking midfielder as well. He's not a defensive box.
He can play in a more like withdrawn role deeper in midfield. He's not a defensive midfielder. I agree with you, but...
He kind of gets run over in that position.
That's the next piece that they need to figure out. They need to figure out, is Fabinho going to be the deepest lying midfielder in that team after the terrible season he just had? Or are they going to go sign someone else to, you know, give them at least another option if Fabinho continues to perform badly? If they have Fabinho back to at least closer to his best, and then they have McAllister, Szoboszlai, and then a front three of, let's just say, Luis Diaz, Nunez, Salah, then the players that they have coming off the bench are like Harvey Elliott, Hakpo, and I'm sure I'm missing, you know, a couple others. But I think in a season where Liverpool have Europa League, this is a good problem to give themselves. Give them, if they have too many options to fit into their Premier League team, they can have the other players who aren't necessarily starting all the league games, consistently play in Europa League and perform well in Europa League against lesser opposition. And if there's an injury for the first team players, then those bench players are coming right into the first team in good form and in good confidence to try and continue that form in the Premier League. I think it's something that needs to be done by Klopp.
I think it'll be a good rebuilding. Yeah, I think it's a great signing for Liverpool. I would have taken him at Arsenal if we didn't have someone like Odegaard already, and if we hadn't signed Kai Havertz. But I mean, I probably would have even taken him over Kai Havertz. He's a very, very good player. So excited, I'm sure Liverpool fans are. And like you said, there's still a few more pieces that they need to do to sign, but they've done their deals early, getting McAllister, getting him in, getting Dominic in as well. I'm going to say Dominic, getting him in as well.
It's really not that hard of a name to pronounce. Szoboszlai. Like it's, you just treat the Z in that name like an H. So it's like SH, Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
That's easy.
You'll hear it enough times from commentators and it'll just, you know, download itself into your subconscious. But yeah, that's a very exciting one that I think Liverpool fans should be excited about as, you know, their signing of the season. The next one we've kind of mentioned last week, but, you know, finally made official, Sandro Tonali going to Newcastle, a record deal for an Italian player.
God, I'm jealous about that one. He is a great defensive midfielder. He's the anchor of Italy. I know Jorginho's kind of been there for a while, but Tonali's the heir to the throne there. And you know, this is a quality signing that I don't think a lot of people expected Tonali to ever leave. And I think he didn't go to another Italian team because it would have just hurt their fan base too much. So for him to be going to Newcastle, I think he's making big bucks. 64 million euros for a player from the Italian league. This was one of the best players.
That's a record for an Italian player.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe that?
No, yeah. I mean, this is... No, that's incredible. But no, they don't usually leave the Italian league, Italian players. It's a very rare thing.
Yeah, I can...
The best Italian players usually go to Juventus or Inter or... You know, it's generally hard for Italian players to be successful outside of Italy. And I think Tonali is going to be the one type of player that... Oh man, it's such a good signing for Newcastle. I mean, him in midfield with Guimaraes and Joe Ellington is going to be a beast. They don't have to play Longstaff or like Anderson there. Yeah, no, Willock was playing in the front three last year.
Poor Joe Willock.
He wasn't playing in midfield. No, Willock is still going to be in the team. He'll still be in the front three.
All right, who's he starting over in the front three?
Willock, and Almiron. Yeah. Isak, Willock, Almiron. Those were the three starters.
Callum Wilson is out.
Yeah, no. Well, either Wilson
Sam
or Isak.
Maximan is still there
Isak
as well. You're
Wilson.
Forgetting about him.
Maximan barely played last year.
He was injured for a bit, but he came back and played. They just spent a bit.
But Newcastle are
going to
be annoyingly
on,
good,
Anthony
Alex.
Gordon
this is such a...
In January?
Yeah, this is... Anthony Gordon's trash. That was not
I'm not saying I think he's amazing, but I'm saying Newcastle spent a bunch of money to get him in. So clearly they think highly of him in some way. I'm just saying it's going to be tough for Joe Willock to get game
time
there.
I think Newcastle defensively are going to be even better than they were last season with this signing. And they're going to be better on the ball than they were last year. They're going to have more control in games against teams that sit back against them. And this is just such a good signing for them. I can't praise this signing enough. I would have 100% wanted him at Arsenal. I mean, he's, again, quality player. Anytime I watch him play, he's just so calm on the ball. You know, not an Andrea Pirlo regen in that he does take free kicks, but he's not as good, nearly as good as Pirlo was. But just, you know, a player that I think in 10 years he could still be a phenomenal player. You know, 15 years, he's 38 years old. He could still be playing and be a very good player. So these are the type of player that you want in your team, and he could be on Newcastle for a long time. And again, very jealous of that signing.
A couple of quick ones before we go. Nathan Collins, the Irish center back, who I think only just moved to Wolves last year. He's moved on again, this time to Brentford, in a record deal for an Irish player, 27 million euros. That's a very interesting move for Brentford. Nathan Collins, I've been high on him since his days at Stoke, especially as an Ireland fan. We can always produce decent center backs, but Nathan Collins seems like a cut above the rest of the Irish like crop of center backs. He can chip in with a goal, goals off the set pieces. He's very mobile, which isn't normal for the Irish center backs. We're used to more Shane Duffy types who are just, you know, a mountain of a man, but can't really get about and track runners as well. Nathan Collins has none of those problems. Still only 22, like I mentioned. That's going to be a huge signing for Brentford, who were, you know, they brought in like Ben Mee from Burnley last year, and he was excellent for them while not being the most mobile or agile player in the back line. Nathan Collins could take his place and, you know, immediately raise their options defensively. And they were already a pretty good team at the back. So that's definitely an interesting one for Brentford. And then one that caught my eye when just looking, scanning the transfers from the last week is this Bart Verbruggen kid, this 20-year-old goalkeeper from Anderlecht who just signed for Brighton for about 20 million. I know you love Jason Steele, Javier, but this seems to me like this is going to be their goalkeeper of the future. 20 years old.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, apparently Belgian. He's, you know, prodigy. He's been killing it in Anderlecht last year. I've read a little bit about him. I know Jason Steele's probably going to be the starting goalkeeper to start the season. I think it means Sanchez is probably out the door. I could see Chelsea signing Sanchez later on in the transfer window. I could see United going for Sanchez if they don't get Onana. You know, I do think that he ends up on one of those types of teams, and Brighton just kind of him and something happened between him and Brighton and De Serbi in the middle of the season last year for him to get dropped, and he never got his place back in the team. So I think it's going to be Steele and, you know, this is Bart van Bruggen, Verbruggen kid. So excited to see another, you know, goalie prodigy in the Premier League.
So let's end things on another somber note. We're going to go sad, a sad sandwich. Start with a sad one and end with a sad one. A player very close to both of our hearts, Cesc Fabregas, has retired at the age of 36. He's played the last 2 or 3 years for Como in Italy, I think down in the second division of Italy. And he's now moved into a coaching role with them for their youth team. So it looks like he's retired, not just because his legs are gone, they were gone a couple of years ago, but he's retired because he's in a beautiful place like Lake Como with his family, and he wants to get into the coaching side of things. So if he's got, you know, the opportunity to do so there, I don't blame him for retiring. Can we just talk about the decision-making this man had to pick the best clubs for his career? Obviously, he's Catalan, started at Barcelona, got picked out of the Barcelona La Masia youth team when he was 15 or 14 by Arsene Wenger.
2004, moved to London. Yeah.
He plays in London for what, like 6 or 7 years, like for Arsenal's team?
8 years, Alex.
8 years. I think he was technically part of the Invincibles team, though he wasn't really starting games.
He was
in the squad, kind of like
he was in the squad,
like Gael Clichy. Mm-hmm. Moved back to Barcelona to join all of his friends from La Masia. He was in the same youth team as Messi and Piqué and Iniesta and all that lot. Joined up with them, won a couple of league titles. I don't think he ever won the Champions League at Barcelona, but
no, they lost in the final.
But, you know, he was also part of those Spain national teams that won, you know, the
He won the European both Euros Championship with them. Twice. He won the World Cup.
And then once he was done at Barcelona, moved on to Chelsea.
He got the winning goal didn't he? In the
which one? Because the first one they beat Germany, and Torres scored in that game in the Euros in 2008, and in 2012 they hammered Italy, and I can't remember if he scored in that game, but he was starting as like a false nine for them. Yeah, 2012 he was starting way more in that Euros, but. After Barcelona, like I said, went to Chelsea, came back to the Premier League, finally won his Premier League titles with Chelsea, another FA Cup to boot, and then finished off his career. Well, actually, no, he went to Monaco after that. Another great location. So far, we've got Barcelona, London, Monaco, and then at the final stop at Como, Lake Como, famously beautiful area of northern Italy. So shout out to that man for being an absolute magician and hell of a player for both Chelsea and Arsenal.
Yeah, he was my favorite player when for years and years, you know, in the Arsenal team. I only have good memories of him and that team, and it was so sad when he went to Barcelona.
I was going to say, we were talking before this about what's the equivalent kind of like transfer for, you know, for you, for how I feel about Mason Mount. I feel like Cesc Fabregas is probably the closest we can get to that.
But Cesc was like the one of the best midfielders in the Premier League when Gerrard and Frank Lampard and Yaya Toure and all these amazing midfielders were in the Premier League. He was on their level, and for him to have been on that level for most of his career.
Yaya came in like 2011.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I mean, he ended up coming to Chelsea. Yeah, but he, you know, I'm sure that they played again. They played him. Did they play in the same team together? No, they didn't.
No, Yaya left Barcelona like before Fabregas came. But Fabregas went to Barcelona maybe like a year or two after Yaya had left. So they weren't really overlapping in the league that much, other than when he was at Chelsea, obviously.
I'm just saying, Cesc was one of the best midfielders in the league the entire time he was in the Premier League. You know, whether he was at Barcelona in Spain, I mean, this guy was just so silky on the ball. Probably had the best vision I've ever seen of a player.
Oh my God!
Maybe like up there with Paul Scholes. You know, just unbelievable vision and like creativity. So. Just
before we close this up, just off of that, I want to say when we signed Fabregas in 2014, the first game of the 2014-15 season, the two players that we had signed that were like, you know, the two puzzle pieces that we were missing from winning the league were Fabregas and Diego Costa. And then the very first game, we went down at Burnley, and then Fabregas played a first time ball from like a cross to him at the top of the box. It came in first time, dinked it with his right foot. Like found Andre Schürrle for a goal that put us up.
He was
like
so
3-1.
Good at those first time dinks.
I'm not kidding you. In that moment, I sat back and just went, "Oh my God, we're winning the league!" And we did. We walked the league that year, 2014-15. I was like, "Holy shit, we're walking the league!" Andre Schürrle like just scored one, put on a plate for him by Fabregas. Like it would have been harder to not score that one. And the rest is history. Love that guy. Love that player. And hopefully, he turns out to be a good manager. All right, Javier, I'd say we've gone long enough. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please go ahead and leave a rating and review. Those new ratings and reviews help new listeners to find the pod. And we always appreciate it when you guys can help us boost the listens on this a little bit. Enjoy your football-less weekend, and until next time, see you.